Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Tracy K. Smith is the United States Poet Laureate, and she gave the commencement address at Wellesley College today. Born in Massachusetts, graduated from Harvard, Smith is a spectacular poet, and her accolades are plenty. She won the Cave Canem Prize for Best First Book by an African-American poet for her 2003 work, The Body's Question. The Pulitzer Prize followed for her 2011 collection, Life on Mars, where both the sensitivity and scale of her poetry were on full display. I mean, just consider this line from the poem, My God, It's Full of Stars, which explores Smith's relationship with her father, a NASA engineer who worked on the Hubble Space Telescope. She writes in the poem, "The first few pictures came back blurred, and I felt ashamed for all the cheerful engineers, my father and his tribe. The second time the optics jibed, we saw to the edge of all there is, so brutal and alive, it seemed to comprehend us back." Well, Tracy K. Smith's latest collection is called Wade in the Water, titled after the African-American spiritual that's associated with the Underground Railroad. More about that in a moment. We had a chance to talk with Smith yesterday when she had just arrived at Wellesley, and we started with the notion that poetry can induce a meditative state of mind, one that can be a rehumanizing force, in her words. And Tracy K. Smith told me that as U.S. Poet Laureate, she's taken that belief across the country, especially to more rural places, like when she visited a men's addiction rehab center in Kentucky.
And so there were 100 men who were, you know, being served by this center, who were willing to listen to some poems and open up about what they made them feel. That was particularly exciting because I shared poems that I've lived with for some time, and I got a new perspective on them because of the things that they spoke to in this different community.
What were they saying?
Well, for example, I read a poem by Laura Kosciuszko that is called Heart Mind. And in that poem, the speaker is thinking about the struggle of reason and emotion. And she brings in really beautiful, vivid, and surprising metaphors to think about that. And at the end of the poem, she says, "Oh, how surprising all this love I must have felt." And it's a poem about realizing that love is something that defies logic and that, you know, doesn't always last. And listeners heard, they heard things in that poem that spoke to some of the struggles that they've encountered that had to do with trying to not necessarily will love to obey, but to will, you know, other feelings, maybe feelings that had set, you know, addiction into play in their lives. And I thought it was really beautiful to be reminded how versatile and useful poems are. They give us different vocabularies for the things that are on our minds, even if they are, if the poems themselves are setting out to speak to different things.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be a poet laureate for a second term, and I'm seeing here that the inaugural event for your second term was, it seems like you're going to be shifting gears a lot because it's Staying Human, Poetry in the Age of Technology. Tell us about that.
Well, I wanted to think about what language allows us to do and what language, if we're not paying attention, pulls us away from. And so I started out talking about the vocabulary for commerce and utility and efficiency and even the ways that our notions of friendship and, you know, what it means to be following or branding ourselves in different ways, what that's done to our sense of perhaps the inner life. And poetry as an alternative to this market-driven language that increasingly pervades our lives gives us a vocabulary to, you know, listen to the quiet, irrational sometimes, and powerful feelings that also characterize our lives.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that we think actively about the terms that are defining ourselves for ourselves and that we exercise choice.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more. And using poetry as a means to remind ourselves of that seems to be powerful and beautiful and hopefully very, very effective as well. You know, I want to talk for a second. I'm shifting gears a lot here, but I want to talk for a second about your latest collection of poetry called Wade in the Water. many of the poems are based on letters and statements from African Americans who served as soldiers during the Civil War, or their wives or family members. Is that right?
Right. Yeah, there's a sequence that I think of as central to the book that's really drawing from those documents. I found these letters, and there were also deposition statements that veterans had given in an attempt to claim pensions after the war. And they spoke to me so powerfully about belief in, you know, the values of freedom and humanity that, you know, many of these soldiers believed they were fighting for, and the ways that justice was denied many of them. And I thought that the dignity and the persistence of their attempts to, you know, be embraced by this country was instructive. And it was a chorus of voices that I was eager to invite others to listen to.
Mm. And so do you use some of their actual words in your poems?
Yeah. The poem is entirely comprised of their language, their letters, and their statements. And so I've really just curated what I feel like is an experience of listening.
Now, do you have your book, your collection there with you?
I do.
Because I'm wondering if you could read the title poem, Wade in the Water, to us?
Sure. Absolutely. This poem comes from the experience of attending a ring shout in coastal Georgia and thinking about the history that that tradition speaks to. Wade in the water for the Geechee Gullah ring shouters. One of the women greeted me. "I love you," she said. She didn't know me, but I believed her, and a terrible new ache rolled over in my chest, like in a room where the drapes have been swept back. "I love you. I love you," as she continued down the hall past other strangers, each feeling pierced suddenly by pillars of heavy light. "I love you" throughout the performance, in every hand clap, every stomp. "I love you" in the rusted iron chains someone was made to drag until love let them be unclasped and left empty in the center of the ring. "I love you" in the water where they pretended to wade, singing that old blood-deep song that dragged us to those banks and cast us in. "I love you," the angles of it scraping at each throat, shouldering past the swirling dust motes in those beams of light, that whatever we now knew we could let ourselves feel, knew to climb. Oh, woods. Oh, dogs. Oh, tree. Oh, gun. Oh, girl, run. Oh, miraculous many gone. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Oh, Lord. Is this love the trouble you promised?
That's Wade in the Water by Tracy K. Smith, read by Tracy K. Smith for us. That was beautiful, Tracy. Thank you so much for doing that.
Thank you.
I mean, can you tell me a little bit more about the poem and the story that you're telling there?
Sure. So I was in this region of the country doing some research for a project that I'm currently working on and looking at sites of, you know, the awful history of slavery in this country, many of which were marked, like plantations, which are now, you know, vacation sites. And many were unmarked, like the sites of former slave auctions that are now, you know, just places that people pass through. And I had a lot of emotions swirling within me during this visit. And on the last night, to enter into this space where I think the beautiful, resilient tradition of the spiritual was being celebrated, it allowed me to kind of process some of this. And I think the most beautiful gift that was given to me on that trip was, you know, a woman who actually said, "I love you," to every single person that she met that night. And it wasn't fake. It wasn't a little act. It was a really beautiful way of, I think of it as like a human offering or a humanizing offering. And it brought a lot of feelings out. When I got back home, I wanted to return to that feeling, and I wanted to mine or explore it a little bit more. And the images that come into the end of the poem, which to me really speak to the sense of escape, you know, mm-hmm. woods, dogs, tree, gun. It was kind of cathartic, and I loved being able to bring that sense of history together into the poem that really is just a narration of a surprising anecdote.
Yeah. And of course, great poetry is timeless, right, by definition. But I wonder what it means to you to bring these words out now, for America now, because it feels like the country does feel so divided and continuously grappling with its history, as it must and should.
Yeah, I mean, we grapple with it, we struggle with it, but I'm not sure we're really listening and reflecting in the ways that might be most useful. I have found myself really disturbed and shocked over the last years to discover that this history that I thought was so remote, and the questions or the, you know, conundrums of racial difference that seemed like maybe we had gotten our heads around them, all of that seemed to get like right in the present and announce itself as completely or predominantly unresolved, unexamined. For me, looking at history and trying to look humbly at some of the quiet voices that persist from that time is a way of trying to hear or learn something that could be useful now.
Do you see that as a responsibility for your art right now?
Well, I use poetry to really process the things that feel urgent to me. And so I feel like it's something that motivates me as an artist. I don't feel that, you know, being poet laureate means that I have to be doing this. But I like the coincidence that I'm doing some, you know, what feels to me like soul searching around questions of compassion and love during a time when I get to talk a lot about why poetry can be useful.
Yeah. You know, there's one more part of your new collections I just want to ask you briefly about, because you also have correspondence between members of a white family regarding the sale of slaves they owned.
Yeah. There's a really beautiful history of the Charles Colcock Jones family called Dwelling Place, by Erskine Clark. And in that, he attempts to look at the, you know, well-documented history of the slave-owning family, the Joneses, but also to reconstruct as much history as possible of the people who were enslaved on their plantations. And there's one family, some of the members' names are Patience and Phoebe. And at one point, one of the daughters in the family had run away and was presenting herself as free to a certain extent. And this came to the attention of the Joneses, and they wrote letters back and forth trying to figure out what to do, how to reprimand this young woman, or whether or not they ought to sell the family members. And, you know, it's harrowing. It doesn't cease to be completely traumatic to read the vocabulary of commerce applied to human beings and a family that is about to be separated. This is a long set of letter, like correspondence, and I winnowed it down to a few brief stanzas that I imagine might be the quiet, inaudible voice of Phoebe herself, or Patience, her mother.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But that poem begins with an epigraph from Mary Jones, who's, you know, at first she says, "I will never be without Phoebe and Patience. I love them so much." And then later, you know, they're debating as to how to dispose of them. And
yeah.
So I wanted to listen for this other story.
Right. Because I guess the question I was going to ask you is, by crafting poetry out of this body of correspondence, did you ever worry that you ran the risk of creating something beautiful out of what was fundamentally something very ugly?
Well, I like the way that dramatic contrast works in a poem. Even, you know, I find myself using end rhyme sometimes in poems when what is being finished is unresolvable and unsweet. And I think of this poem in a similar way. There's, I think, a lyrical language, a kind of linguistic beauty, but it's speaking to something that I hope is going to agitate and unsettle a reader, which
yeah.
is how I felt thinking about these lives.
Well, it's interesting because we're talking to you because you're at Wellesley and you're going to speak to the class of 2018 there. What do you want them to know? What's the message you're going to impart to them?
Well, I've been really obsessed with questions of compassion. We talk about tolerance in the public realm, but we don't talk about love. That's not a word that enters into policymaking. But my question is it possible for us to bring love into the civic spaces that we occupy?
Do you think it's possible?
I think so. I mean, I think it means that we have to recalibrate our sense of who we are and what our response, not even, I don't want to say responsibility because that sounds dour, but, you know, what do our lives have to say and offer to the lives of other people? What can we learn about ourselves from being attentive to them? And I hope that we can get somewhere with that. I think literature is a good start because it asks you to think in vulnerable terms about experience. And vulnerability, I think, fosters a purposeful kind of humility, which makes me believe that you are as important as I am.
Well, Tracy K. Smith is the current United States Poet Laureate. She's also a professor at Princeton University and is giving the 2018 commencement address at Wellesley College. It's been a real pleasure and privilege to speak with you. Thank you so very much.
Oh, thank you.
Well, we spoke with Smith yesterday, so we'll end today with what she told the Wellesley class of 2018 this morning.
I want to congratulate you on what you have diligently and lovingly accomplished. And I want to challenge you to take the feeling of love out of the realm of the private or intimate and allow it to drive the ways that you see and respond to strangers across all kinds of divides. I want to challenge you to trouble the notion that love is reserved for an elect few, and that a scrap of tolerance is what we will occasionally toss to the rest. Among all the many things you will go on to teach one another and the world, I want you to teach the world you are right now inheriting to love itself in a way it does not yet believe that it can. Thank you.
That's U.S. Poet Laureate Tracy K. Smith speaking at the Wellesley College commencement today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.